It's time for a legendary introduction.
Welcome to Unpacking the Box.
I really think nobody does it better.
Join the conversation as we cover everything from life and relationships.
All a woman wants is a choice.
Inspiring interviews.
That just hit me.
Wow.
And everything in between.
Just keeping it real.
We keeping it all the way real.
Whoa.
Now let's start unpacking.
This is Linnea, your host.
I'm back.
Today, I'm here with Megan Duncan, who is the founder of Connected Kids Thrive and the Connected Kids Thrive community. She is also a foster mom, early childhood communication facilitator, parenting and behavior coach, certified in positive discipline with a background in pediatric speech therapy. Y'all, she wears many hats. She is so amazing. Megan is passionate about helping parents and children use easy yet effective communication together so that frustration is reduced and cooperation and connection is elevated. And I am a parent myself of three, and we thank you, okay? I'm speaking for the parents all over. We thank you for your work, Megan.
Thank you. Yes, it's a blast.
Yes. So where are you from?
I live in Colorado.
Ooh, Colorado. How is the weather there? Because I heard it gets like really super cold.
Yeah, we go 20 below to 110.
Oh, wow. Oh, goodness. Yeah. Okay. How's the food there?
The food is great. We have lots and lots of Mexican food here. Where, you know, there's lots and lots of Mexican food, and there's all varieties too, but we're pretty close to the southern border a little bit.
Awesome. Okay, I love Mexican food. I love it. Mm-hmm. I'm a foodie, so I like to do a foodie vibe check with people. I love it. Mm-hmm. Yes. So let's jump right into your journey, which is a very unique one. And I know it hasn't been an easy one. And just, you know, looking at your story, first of all, I think it's amazing that you go around talking about it and, you know, inspiring so many people, helping parents, helping children. So I know that you grew up in a religious cult. So if you are comfortable sharing, can you tell us what your experience was like?
Yeah. You know, as children, we all, and this is what trauma is, right? We all have experiences, and then it's how we process those experiences that turn it into a traumatic experience or not. And I didn't even know it was, you know, crazy essentially until I, you know, got out and looking back. And do you want me to share some specifics of like, whoa, I didn't even know?
If you're comfortable, I think there's still a lot of people out there who don't really understand what a cult is, what, okay. You know, so maybe, if you could explain like exactly what you were in.
Yeah. So it was very male dominated. They, you know, the male parts of our church kind of got to say how everything went down. There was no medical intervention ever. And so women, you know, we truly gave everything to God's hands. If we were supposed to die giving childbirth, we were supposed to die giving childbirth. We weren't supposed to use medicated chapstick. I mean, nothing medicated at all, no medical intervention. I used to have this perspective of, you know, these people, I used to have a little bit of respect for it because I came for like, wow, I can appreciate someone willing to die for their beliefs. And even when I stepped away, I was like, I don't identify with that anymore, but I can so appreciate how someone could just lie there and die for their God. Right. And then my mom, well, in childbirth, okay, I'm not gonna go to my mom quite yet. And then I had a baby. Right. I had my first child. And then I came into the mindset of who does that? Who just lies there and dies when they have a new life to take care of? Mm-hmm. So I couldn't even appreciate that piece anymore. I was terrified to have my baby in a hospital because I had been conditioned to think that all doctors and hospitals were evil. And so I chose to get a midwife and have my baby at home, which in and of itself was a beautiful experience. But that even though I was empowered, my husband supported me, so I was empowered in a way to do this at home, and I would do it again at home. However, I didn't do it at a hospital because I was fearful. I was terrified. And so I, 30 hours of labor and at home, water birth. It was a beautiful experience. And then lo and behold, we had to go to the hospital anyways for breathing issues. And oh my goodness, they were so kind. They treated me with the utmost kindness and care and respect that I had never experienced. And they treated my baby so well. And I couldn't believe how much they cared when I had been conditioned to believe that they did not care. And so I think, yeah, it all comes down to feeling powerful and connected and confident in our decisions and not feeling pressure and guilt and fear. Many women and girls in the church I grew up in, I think, and in cults, across the land, they're just not empowered to make decisions for themselves that they feel good about. It's layered with guilt and fear. And this is definitely the case in the own cult that I grew up in, that will be ostracized for our decisions. My mom got breast cancer and she couldn't even tell her mom that she was going to start having treatment because there would have been so much shame and you've got to come back. And the reason you got breast cancer is because you left and all of this stuff. And it was at that point that I was like, I really saw it as problematic. So yeah, just that. And, there's elements of my upbringing that I appreciate for sure. And my parents, just as we all do, we are doing the best we can with the tools and the understanding that we have right now. And that goes for our kiddos too. They're doing the best they can with the tools and the skills that they have right now. And so I don't even hold any ill will towards my parents. In fact, my mom is one of my best friends. And it was interesting, like anytime I would have an issue with my kid, behavioral wise, I would ask her, like, what did you do? And she said, I would just go to bed and pray that I would have the answer tomorrow. And the answer never came because it went, you never saw outside intervention at all, whether it was in parenting, medical, it was just, so that's the cult that I grew up in.
Wow. Now this was your mom and dad, like your family?
It was a whole church. Yeah.
Oh, a church. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how long were you in that?
I was in it for 18 years, 0 to 18. Yep. I left when I was 18.
You were 18. Was this something that was easy for you to leave? Was it, you just left, or was it hard? Was it challenging?
I met a boy and he, he actually went to my church as to ask my dad made him, go one time and, just, kind of see what it was about. And he was just like, oh my goodness. And he was just like, I got to get you out of here. So I did the most awful thing. And I left with him to Washington State actually for about a year. And I ended up marrying this boy, and on our, during our wedding or that day, my mom served my dad divorce papers. So then they left the church after I got married, which, I was like, all that pain and drama and trauma and being forced to do this. And everyone just leaves after I get married. So, at least my siblings didn't have to continue on in that too much longer.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad you definitely, were able to get out of it. So when you stepped into parenthood, mm-hmm. I read that you found yourself repeating generational mm-hmm. parenting patterns. So how did you overcome that generational, you know, behavior? Because I feel like that's a big thing too with our families. A lot of times, I'm a mother too, and mm-hmm. a lot of times we say we won't do certain things that our parents did, but then like unintentionally we'll find ourselves repeating things that our parents did, you know. So how did you overcome that behavior?
Yeah, so I had gained a little bit of skills from going, you know, going to college and then having a preschool. I realized in my home, I realized, gosh, I cannot treat these kids the same way I treat my kid. I've got to learn some tools here. And I often reflect about that, how my kid wasn't good enough for me to get more skills. It was other people's kid who inspired me to really change my behavior and get some more skills. Mm-hmm. And so I had to get more skills so I could, you know, stop yelling. And I could never, you know, use any kind of physical punishment with them, just as I was my kid. And as I learned that, you know, we don't ever have to use physical punishment. There are so many tools out there that we can use. So it was my, you know, my preschool kiddos who really kind of forced me to elevate my parenting and how I approached them. So I learned a little bit there. And then when I became a foster mom, I had to take more classes because, you know, these kiddos have to be treated a certain way and they have even harder behaviors oftentimes. So I really had to elevate my game, which made me a better parent for them, but also a better parent for my bio kid as well.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I just love how you, because I was reading your story and I'm like, I just love how you turned what you went through and how you grew up. You just turned it into something so great. You use it as a tool, really, a resource to help other people. I love that.
Thank you. It's and I resisted looking at it for a really, really long time. You know, I used to say, I'm not a parent coach. I'm a parenting coach because I know the tools. Like I know how to get kids to listen and cooperate. I can help, you know, I can help parents do that piece. And the other missing piece of the puzzle is the parent piece. It's us working on ourselves and really looking at our own shadows and mm-hmm. being really willing to do that work. And I wasn't willing to do that work for quite a while. It was really hard mm-hmm. going, you know, just allowing someone, because it's hard to do it by yourself, but allowing yeah. someone to take you through that journey of healing is so, so powerful.
I love that. Yes, it's very powerful. I love that. So through all the things that you went through, mm-hmm. What does your like long-term healing and healing maintenance process look like? Did you have to seek like therapy or anything just to, you know, help yourself?
I'm at this point, I cannot claim to be a Christian. It's just too, I just, you know, how my family and the church, the Bible, the way they took it, it justified all their actions and they never had to reflect or grow or repair or anything like that. And I realize my own bias and I look for that pattern. And so that's a really interesting thing that I see myself doing. But I still feel like the hypocrisy of at least Christians that I know that I'm related to. At this point, I can't claim myself to be a Christian. Mm-hmm. Maybe someday, I don't know what that will look like for me, but, so I have chosen to go the energy route to go for healing. And I don't know if you've heard of past life regression or not. Have you heard of that?
No, I have not.
Okay. I met this woman online and that's the work, the energy work that she does. And she took me back through my timeline and it was like jumping through time. It was like she put me in kind of a hypnotic state and I jumped back through my timeline. And the thing that we were working on was guilt for me. And I I know that, you know, I'm 37 years old. I feel guilty for so many things. And where does that come from? And so she took me to the very first time I felt guilt. And as I was going back, I went even, you know, in first grade, like we couldn't have a Christmas tree in our religion, in our church, because that was a false deity thing or something. And up until now, I've always hated Christmas because it just does something to me. Well, as she took me back, it clicked why I hate Christmas. But that wasn't the first time that I ever felt such guilt. I almost killed my mom in childbirth. And even though she never, I just heard that story, you know, all my life, that I, you know, as I was being born, all these things happened and she almost died. And it was never positioned to me as you did this thing, but how was a child supposed to take that, you know? Mm-hmm. And as I was doing this work, that was the first time that I ever felt guilt, was as a small child realizing that I almost killed my mom. And it's just, it's so powerful because we as parents, we do things and we say things, you know, to our kids or around our kids, and it impacts our kids in ways that we just don't realize. Mm-hmm. And it impacts them forever until they do their own work. And so I've been working on this guilt thing, and it was really powerful seeing the first time that I ever felt guilt, why I felt guilt. And now, you know, just that healing process, and I don't feel guilty like I did up until like 3 months ago is when I had my first session.
Okay. Well, I'm proud of you for working through that, just to admit those things and to bring those things to the surface so that you can work through them. I love that. That's what we need more of. I think being a parent just is really tough anyway. I think it's one of the toughest jobs to be a parent, because you're essentially molding another human being, you know. So I love that you are, you know, working through that.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It is the toughest, most hardest job ever. And most important job ever. And I think it's the job that we're prepared the least for. We study,
yes.
we study and take classes on like everything else, from astronomy to horseback riding to whatever we're inspired to do. And then we have these beings, and yes, a part of it is intuition and our gut response, you know, but a big part of it is, okay, I need to know a little bit about child development. I need to know a little bit about behavior and motivation so that I can, you know, team with this little being and not overpower them and take all their, you know, strip them of their essence. And so, agreed fully. It's the hardest, most amazing job on the planet.
Yes, it is. Oh my goodness. It is. I'm like, I have two teenagers and then one older son. He's 20. So I have a 20-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 16-year-old. I'm like, oh my goodness. When we got to the teenage stage, it's like, oh, it's a whole different world.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my goodness. And it's like, I'm always like trying to make sure I say the right thing. But I'm big on, because I know a lot of parents, they feel like they view the child as a child, you know, stay in a child's place. You're not supposed to talk back. You're not supposed to say this. But I'm big on, in my household, like letting the kids express themselves as far as like, what are you feeling? Like, what is going on? Like things like that. Because I think kids should be able to be free with their emotions, you know, and tell us how they feel and stuff. Cause I think that's important. Cause a lot of times, you know, we hold things in. I know me as a child, I would hold a lot of things in, which poured out into my adulthood because I held so much in, you know? So yeah.
I 100% agree with you. We should be inviting our kiddos' voices and helping them explore their feelings so they don't have to pocket everything, so that they're not triggered with their own kids.
Yes, I agree. So let's get into Connected Kids Thrive, your company. I love it. So tell people who aren't familiar with it, tell them what it all entails and how you're helping others.
Okay. I have a 12-week program, which takes parents in this transformational process from where they are, where it's breaking down, what they need to learn so that they can, you know, invite their kiddos to listen and cooperate. And it just takes them through the whole process. I use cooking as a tool because cooking is the biggest bang for our parenting buck. It is a really unique setting that the kiddos, it's kind of forbidden to kiddos oftentimes. And so when we invite them in and, you know, while baking cookies, I really believe cookies can save the world, change the world. While we're making cookies with our kiddos, we can model every desirable behavior that we want, whether it's social behavior, emotional behavior, or even academic behavior. So I'm a foster mom too. And when I get a foster kiddo, the first thing I do, the minute that we can, is get into the kitchen together. And so we're side by side, we're making cookies, and I can model making a mistake and just taking accountability, cleaning it up and moving on. I don't have to sneak or hide or fold in or anything like that. And so, and these children are learning that they can trust me not to blow up, and they can start to trust themselves and remember that they're good inside.
I love that. That is cool. Cooking. I love it.
Thank you. It's, and then, you know, at the end when everyone is enjoying these cookies, you know, they're reinforced again when they're appreciated. The number one thing our kids need is belonging and significance. And cooking hits those requirements. And if we want better behavior from our kiddos, they have to feel a sense of belonging and significance. So, yeah, when they're appreciated, then they want to repeat that behavior again. And we can go from there in looking at chores and looking at anything else they need to do from the place of cooking.
I love that. That's an awesome technique. I would never thought of that. Since you laid it out like that, it does make sense, though. I love that.
Thank you. And there's no age too young. And I have, yeah. And for anyone interested, I have some really quick frameworks that you can have or use to make it as easy and successful as possible. I don't know if we want to talk about those today or another time, or if you just want a resource, but that way it's easy and successful for you and your kiddos.
Yes, you can definitely go into that.
Okay. So the first one I'll talk about is we got to have a poopy mindset. And I actually termed it that on purpose because hopefully that brings a smile to everyone's face. Is like, what did she just say? And so that, okay. And so what is having a poopy mindset? That first P is patient. We have to know that we got to be patient. Messes are going to happen. Eggs might be dropped. Flour might be poofed. There might be kids getting on and off stools. We can teach skills so these things reduce over time, but they're going to happen. And we've got to just commit to being patient for the duration of our time together with our kiddos. We want to keep it about the connection, not about the food. So that first P is for patience. And then those next two O's are oopsies into opportunities. And so when that egg drops, when that kiddo rips that bag of chocolate chips open and those chips just scatter all over the floor, whatever happens, that's our cue, you know, to model, oh, that's a bummer. Sometimes that happens. What should I grab? Should I grab the broom or a rag? And we are offering to help them. And so that's a behavior that we want from them, right? Taking accountability and offering to help us and others. We get to model that in this beautiful, authentic way. And then the other P is playful. Can we be, that is a child's most natural language, is playfulness. Mm-hmm. And so I like to, first of all, I try and hit on all five love languages. When I'm in the kitchen with my kiddos, I'm touching their back. I'm handing them gifts. I'm trying like a chocolate chip in their mouth as a gift. I'm asking if they need anything to serve them. I am loading them up with goodness and attention because, you know, when our kiddos are acting in negative ways, they're wanting attention. Mm-hmm. So I use this time to load them up with positive quality attention. And then if it's a yes to the POOP, if it's a yes, then you're ready. You're ready to just go in with your kiddo and let it be about the connection and the process. Our kids don't need perfection. If we could just let perfection go, we need to be present and in the process. And that's what they need. That's what we need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I agree. I agree. I love it.
Thank you. I have one more. I know cooking with kiddos can feel very overwhelming for parents. So we can just invite our kiddo in for 1 minute to do one task and then let them go. We don't have to make them, have to stay for the duration or, you know, anything like that. We can say, hey, buddy, would you mind cutting the cheese real quick? And then I'll put it in the macaroni and you can go back to playing. Would you mind helping me? And we're going to let them say no if they don't want to. Okay, cool. Maybe next time. Let me know if you change your mind. We're giving them power back so that they want to be by us. And oftentimes with that, they'll be like, oh, I changed my mind right now. And they come in and they do the one thing and they get to leave. And it was successful. And it's just the idea that we don't have to make them stay for the duration. And that brings me to the next point. This might be a little different way of thinking for a lot of parents here, but we don't need to force them to clean up the mess either. Not yet. So, you know, oftentimes, and this, I do co-baking connection Zoom classes in my community also. And so when we cook with our kids, we've already been in their bubble. They've been in our bubble for like, I don't know, 30 minutes typically. And then we go into this forcing cleanup mode and it just tears everything apart. So what we can do instead is start where they can be successful. You know, where the cookies are done. And then we can just say, hey, will you put that dish in the sink real quick? I'll clean up the rest. And then the next time, hey, will you grab that and that? And start to build their tolerance because they have an association. Many of our kiddos have an association that cleanup sucks. And so they automatically go into this space of it's going to be awful. So we need to rebuild that, especially with us in the kitchen. Let it be about connection first and build up from there.
That is definitely a different, interesting angle to take with kids, because I never thought about that either, because I agree with you. Just, you know, for my own kids, they do not like cleaning at all. Getting them to clean is really, really like pulling teeth because they don't like to clean. But yeah, I love that. I love that take on it. So see, I love how you're bringing like new ideas. Like, I know parents are so grateful and so thankful for you and like your ideas and helpful tips. Which is, I know this is another thing that I want to go into, because I know when I was reading about your story, you had mentioned something in there regarding raising voice, which resonated with me. I think so many parents, I think because a lot of kids have selective hearing. Okay. They hear what they want. So I feel like us as parents, you know, we'll go a couple notches higher so that they can hear us, you know, but that can also, which I didn't think about, but that could also cause trauma for kids too, the constant yelling, you know, at them. So what I want to know from you is, can you share, like, some parents who do that, who raise their voice constantly with children, can you share a few tips to use, like parents who get frustrated with their children and they just resort to yelling? What tips would you give them?
All right. So, oh gosh, we could spend all day on just this question. So what I'd love to share with everyone is our kiddos are told what to do 500 to 1,000 times a day. And if we take some perspective and step into their shoes, how would that feel? Could we, at some point, we're just going to start ignoring and screaming back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's everything from shut the door, tie your shoes, put your dish in the dishwasher, quit smacking. I've told you three times, take three more bites. I mean, it's incessant all day long. And we don't even recognize that we're doing this. And then they go to school and they're told what to do, how to do it, when to do it, where to do it, why to do it all day long too. And so they come home and they just melt so often because they've had to keep, you know, they just blow. And so they, because they're, we're you know, talking at them so much, they do start to tune us out until we yell. And then it activates their fight or flight system. Our fight or flight system is activated. And so they might do the thing, but it's not in connection. It's in resentment. And there's just so much better ways that we can go about it. So yeah, I will share some quick tips. Before I get into the tips, the first tip is if we can be curious instead of furious. So if our kid doesn't listen to us the first time, if we can be like, why are they not listening? What is going on? If we can just go into that curious space first, then it'll give us a lot of information. And then I'm a foster mom. I am a bio mom, as already shared. I actually aim to tell my kids what to do 0 times a day. And we have systems in place where they do the things they need without me asking. Now, do they need reminded sometimes? Yes. And that can look like this. Hey, buddy, what's your plan? I notice you're playing in your sand. What was the plan before we play in the sand? So I'm just asking questions to get them to think. So I love this little phrase, the more we say and do, the less they can think and do well themselves. So if we can just use curiosity questions and invite them to shut the door, tie their shoes, do all the things we need them to do, we're giving them power back. The less we say, the less we do, the more power we're giving back to them to do it themselves. Does that make sense? Do you want me to go into that a little deeper?
No, I love that. I love that because I feel like it's because when we as parents yell, I feel like that's a means for us to take our parenting control and power back. So that part, yes, that makes a lot of sense for the kids, you know, to get their power back. So it's kind of, it's like a power struggle and it's like a transfer of the power. So yes, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And what's interesting is oftentimes we as parents actually reinforce the very behaviors we're trying to eliminate. If our kiddo, and that's where looking for that why behind the behavior, once we get with that, then we actually don't reinforce negative behaviors anymore. Because if our kiddo, depending on what they're doing, if they are dragging us, pulling us into a power struggle and we engage, we've just reinforced that behavior.
Yeah.
And so if we can be like, oh, this is something I need to ignore. But moments later, load that kiddo up with attention because that's what they're wanting. If attention was the function behind the behavior, if it was something else, then we need to take a different route. And, you know, I'm giving all these tools and I imagine it sounds exhausting. However, we're gonna spend the time either way. We're gonna spend time yelling and in frustration and dragging to timeouts and punishing and doing all these things. And there's tons of, you know, unforeseen natural consequences that come from our approaches in that way. Where we can be curious and find the why and watch our tone and meet them where they are and all of that. You know, it's time for time. Only one's so much more connected and cooperative.
Yeah, I agree. Do you know, like, about some of the long-term effects that children could face as a result of, like, constantly being yelled at?
It depends on how the child interprets it. Are they going to be, and what's being modeled in the house? You know, if there's a father figure, yelling at a mother figure, and the mother figure just kind of lays down and takes it, then that's probably what that child is going to do.
Yeah.
If the father, and this isn't fair, so I'm going to switch it up now. If the mother figure, you know, yells at the father figure constantly, and if the father figure yells back and is angry back and just it gets super loud and big, then that child could repeat those patterns also. And it's scary. And our kids, our brain interprets things, you know, as trauma, even if there's a sense of safety, even if, you know, either parent figure would never hit them or anything like that, it's still, their brain is still interpreting it as high danger.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, those stack up, those trauma incidences, and then those become trauma responses.
Yeah.
And they leak out. They leak out. They will leak out in their own parenting, and in reactivity. And actually, a study was done. I'm not sure when it was done, but when parents are yelling at each other or yelling at the kids, the cortisol in their urine can be measured, and it's astronomically high, that stress hormone in their urine.
Mm.
And they've done tests on infants, and what's interesting is sometimes even if the child goes quiet and withdraws, their urine tests even higher for cortisol versus the child who also reacts really loudly in outbursts. So kids, it everything we do impacts our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Can I share some good news?
Yes, sure.
So it's the 30-70 rule. So we only have to get this parenting gig right 30% of the time. And so this other 70% is all about repair. When we can take accountability, when we can sit on our butts, which means when we don't say, I'm sorry I yelled at you, but if you know, if we don't do that, because that negates the apology, if we can just do that repair piece, that's the gold. That is so much better than perfect parenting. Our kids don't learn much from perfect parenting. It really is us messing up and repairing for that and growing. You know, we can't just apologize empty apologies all the time. That's not good either. But when we can grow and work on ourselves and our kids see that, that's the good stuff. And it makes it all worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, listen, this parenting thing is definitely a journey, you know, and it's full of ups and downs, all that jazz. So I totally understand.
Yep. Yes.
But, you know, again, we are thankful for people like you that can help us, you know, because sometimes we don't realize things until we talk to someone. Sometimes it takes talking to someone else or reaching out for help or that resource or that tool. So, you know, it's amazing what you do. It's necessary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you are not busy helping others, what are you doing for fun?
I enjoy this so much. I'm actually currently designing a play school for families on my property here in Colorado. I'm working on designing an academy, a child-led academy where the kids take control of their own education. Yes, it is possible. Kids are so dang capable. And so I'm working on those two things. I serve the fostering community in my community. And so, but you know, I also love swimming and paddleboarding and horseback riding and four wheeling. And so I do love nature and the outdoors a lot also.
I love that. Do you watch TV at all?
We only do screen time on weekends as a family.
Okay. What's your favorite movie or TV show, and or both?
Oh, we are totally on a Wednesday kick.
Okay.
Wednesday?
I have not watched that yet, but I heard, like, when it first came out, people were just like raving about it. They were saying it was so good. I haven't gotten around to watching it, but I do want to watch it though. So is it that good? Is it what they say it is?
Well, now your expectations are going to be way too high. So it's okay.
Okay.
Okay. Yourself.
I'm still, you know what? I'm still checking out now. I'm still checking out because I've been saying I wanted to watch it. Like, because I'm like, I just see so many people talking about it. I'm like, you know what? Because I grew up being a big Addams Family fan. So I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, no, you totally should. I hope it hasn't been too hyped up so that you do feel like we love it. And it's a little more scary than I actually anticipated it to be. But,
oh. Okay. Well, I would love it even more because I love scary stuff.
My daughter, who's completely blonde, puts her hair in these, you know, black braids thinking that she's Wednesday. So
I love it.
Yeah, it's super fun.
I love it. Well, listen, I enjoyed talking to you. I learned so much and I know the audience have learned so much. Yes. So before you leave, though, there's something that I love to do with every guest because this is Unpacking the Box. I have a segment called Unpack Your Box. And that's basically where you get a minute to release whatever you want. You can leave, you know, gems, whatever you want to say to the people. If you have something that you need to release, you can release that. It's your moment to say whatever.
Okay, I'm going for it. So parents and everyone listening, I think if there's one thing that if we could all embrace, it's just feeling safe and comfortable and brave in getting any support that we need. We all live in this culture where it's weak to get support, especially parenting support, especially mental health support. But that is the bravest thing we can do, is raise our hand and say, I want help, I need help, and get the support that you want and need wherever it is. You know, we're so willing to take horseback riding lessons and, you know, all the lessons that we want, but parenting and mental health and self-coaching and this personal development, wherever you want to go in, you know, this journey of life, there's people that are, you know, five steps ahead of you that will grab your hand and, you know, help you avoid any of the pitfalls that can be avoided so that you can get where you want to go so much faster. And there's so much good in the world of people willing to help. So, you know, I wish my mom would have got help, you know, instead of just praying. That's cool too, but also get some tangible help so that I didn't have to, you know, do all this that I have to do now. And it's all good, right? She did the best she could with the tools she had. We are all doing the best we can with the tools we have right now. And help is right wherever you want it to be, wherever you are in your journey, help is right there.
Yes, I love that. Yes, Megan, thank you so much. Now tell the people like where they can keep up with you, your websites, handles, all that good stuff.
All right, yeah. Connected Kids Thrive is my business name, and my Facebook parenting community is Connected Kids Thrive Community. And so lots of parenting tips are given in there. So I invite everyone, if you're interested in more respectful parenting tools to really connect with your kids, increase your communication, cooperation, and connection, join us over there. I'm all the time. We're doing fun little challenges and we're really, you know, changing lives. And wherever you are in your journey, we can, whether you're looking just for intimate coaching or a true transformation over, you know, a 12-week period or just some light tips and tricks, wherever you are, we are ready to help.
Yes. Make sure you guys connect. Check out Megan's website. It's amazing. I mean, it takes a village. You know, I know the saying is it takes a village, but it really does take a village when it comes to parenting and kids. So definitely connect. You guys know I would never stare you wrong. Thank you so much, Megan. Your story is so amazing, so inspiring. And I told you before, you know, I know that the journey wasn't an easy one, but it was one that brought you to this beautiful point that you are now. And so I thank you just, you know, on behalf of all of us parents, you know, so I thank you so much. And I genuinely mean that. And I thank you for coming on and talking, you know, taking time out to talk to me.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you everyone for allowing me to be here. And I am honored beyond belief. Thank you, Linnea.
Yes, you are so welcome. All right, y'all, we out. Wait, before you leave, keep up with your girl on Instagram at unpacking_the_box_podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be well.